Mini-episode 1950 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the 2026 NFC North preview on the FDH Lounge, part of our continuing series of previewing the NFL divisions for the 2026 NFL season. FDH Lounge original dignitaries Rick Morris and Chris Galloway coming at you today. And this is going to be a narrow focus on the NFC North. As always with any of the divisions, if you want to hear any big picture stuff, if you want to hear anything more so about the off-season things leading into this season, go check out the first one in our series, the 2026 AFC East Preview. And the format for basically setting the table for all of the divisions comes from Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, available on the main page at fantasydrafthelp.com. And when you go to the back of the guide, it is one run-on sentence for each NFL team. So for the NFC North, this is the predicted order of finish from FDH for this year and the one run-on sentence for each team. Chicago. The universal assumption seems to be to fade Chi-Town because teams with an unlikely quick rise sometimes refund some gains the next season, but the work of roster building continued strongly through the offseason, culminating in the drafting of strong defensive rookie of the year candidate Dylan Tiedemann, who has the potential to help that side of the ball to really congeal, and the prospect of Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams continuing to progress together in year two helps to paint a picture of a team that will be remaining squarely in championship contention. Green Bay. Jordan Love and the Packers are going to have to bust through the plateau in their development. A feat will become much easier if Matthew Golden becomes the kind of passing game weapon that the team has long sought, the kind that Green Bay championship squads have traditionally boasted. Detroit. On the surface, the Lions are poised for a comeback from their somewhat fluky down year in 2025, but they will be adjusting to another new OC, and their playoff record even in this run has been uneven, with their shocking collapse at home to DC in the 2024 divisional round in particular serving as a real skid mark. So the team will have to have everything work out for everything they get this year, especially without Terry and Arnold. Minnesota. A contract year Kyler Murray, who washed out of Arizona, is still infinitely preferable to historic level flop J.J. McCarthy, but this roster isn't as ready for contention as many observers believe, so their path in one of the game's toughest divisions will be incredibly rocky. So this is a thing, Chris, when you look at it, I think there's a lot of parallels between this division and the NFC West. As far as you have three teams and then basically little brother kind of off in the corner here. I think that's basically the same format. There are people.
Was that a Kyler Murray joke? Is that what that was?
Essentially. Yeah. Well, actually, you know what? Commonality there. Great point. Yeah. Arizona and Minnesota. Yeah. I mean, it is the common denominator. I wasn't thinking that, but you're absolutely right. The divisions to me, the shape of them are the same. We may quibble over who the teams are at the top, although by the time we get to the NFC West, I would doubt if either one of us is that bullish on San Francisco right about now with all of their issues. But regardless, it does seem like, you know, in this division, I guess maybe similarly, you probably don't have a lot of people picking Green Bay to win the division because it's probably like the boy who cried wolf at this point. I think you and I picked them to win the Super Bowl a year ago. So
Is that the boy who cried Ron Wolf?
Ron Wolf, great. Yeah, wow, you are in fuego in this segment. I was thinking the same thing after I said it. Yeah, so that's a thing where, yeah, when you look at this, division. Again, maybe I'm being generous, still making them a wild card team at this point because they do have something to prove here. But those three teams there, again, I feel like I'm definitely in the minority as far as picking Chicago to win, to repeat as divisional champions, because it is very, very fashionable this year, highly fashionable, to pick them to regress. And in some quarters, people picking them not even make the playoffs again.
That's not me. I'm going to pick the Bears to finish half a game off the Lions and make the playoffs.
Okay.
I think the Lions are probably positioned because of the schedule to start the season like 4-1 or so and get a nice jump. I think Chicago is a young team, still learning to develop, still learning to win. They lose DJ Moore. Somebody's got to step into his shoes. I'm not down on Chicago at all. In my head, they're a, you know, they're probably a 10-7 and 11-6 team making the playoffs. I've got Detroit at 11-6. You know, I love that Detroit offense, but I just worry about that defense and that secondary and whether or not they're going to really be able to put it together to stop people.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a believer in that offensive talent overall more than where the Bears are right now.
Mm-hmm.
So for that reason, I'll take the Lions edging out the Bears. I actually like the Vikings to finish third on their heels. And I think the Packers are sort of an 8-9 type of team.
Okay.
I don't think Matthew Golden is the answer. I'm not convinced Micah Parsons plays much this year, if he can even stay healthy. I think the Packers have some real problems. And I'm a believer in Jordan Love. But I think that without the help and without the playmakers, I just don't know where they're going. And I don't, that's a tough division. So right now, in my mind, I see the Packers at about 8-9. Again, competitive football team. You know, they're not a team you're going to want to, you know, play on most Sundays. They're not going to be a pushover. But I feel like they're just missing that critical playmaker on offense and defense. And I think that Minnesota's got a much better defense than people think in their head. I think that Kyler Murray he's not a world beater, but let's not forget, he did some pretty good things at times in Arizona. And with some real weapons like Minnesota has, I think, you know, he's playing for his career. His career.
Yeah.
And I think that's enough to make him a little bit dangerous and for, you know, the Vikings to be that sort of, you know, that get into that sort of 9-8, 10-7 territory and compete for a wild card spot. I think they're going to be competing for that. I mean, you know, it isn't like, despite the horrific quarterback play last year, I mean, they didn't bottom out. So yeah. There's a lot of talent on that team. I think the top is, I mean, I think it's an extremely competitive division. Even when I say, oh, you know, the Packers are in last place at, you know, 8-9, you know, that's a pretty good team versus some divisions where the last place team is like, you and I are predicting 2 or 3 wins, right? So yeah. It's a very different division and it's very competitive. And I just, you know, at the top, I kind of went back and forth with their negatives and their positives between the Lions and the Bears, you know, and Tigers and Lions and Bears. Oh my, you know, it really was like trying to handicap the strengths and the negative and be like, okay. And I think those two teams are separated by maybe a game by the end of the season, maybe. Well, and so that's kind of how I see it playing out.
They could be pretty close. I will say, in Fantasy Football Draftology 2026, for the remaining NFC team needs, this is what we had for Minnesota. So this is more than I'm used to seeing listed here. Cornerback, defensive line, linebacker, interior offensive line, and wide receiver. Other than that, they're a pretty stacked top 22. But as far as it goes with some of the teams in the division here, I think Matthew Golden, I think a disproportionate amount of the season is going to come down to him with Green Bay. He was a disappointment a year ago. Part of the reason I picked them to win the Super Bowl is that I thought that he was exactly what they needed. Because, again, as much as, and I always laugh about this, the guys that I've been playing fantasy football with for 30 years plus now, I always laugh about profiling those guys. My good pal Paul Pasek always like, oh, give me Christian Watson, give me Jaden Reed, give me Romeo Doubs when he was there. Like, you do know that none of these guys are the second coming of Antonio Freeman, right? So they did what they needed to do a year ago with going and putting the investment in Golden. And didn't work out from year one. And I've tried to do some research on some of the particulars of it. And it's a thing where I think I'm not going to blame the coaching staff necessarily for this, although I think they have a share of it. But I think it was almost kind of like, well, if he makes it, he makes it. If not, we'll just go to the other guys. Like, I don't think they got that this was like, if you want to win the Super Bowl, this is like a Manhattan Project level here of like, you can't be passe. And I'm not saying that I know that they were, but like, oh, if he elevates above these guys, fine. If not, fine. No. This is like really important. So even if it means you got to force him the ball a little bit here and there just to see what he can do. Again, I don't know enough about all of the micro particulars of why it didn't work out last year. I do know that if they're going to go anywhere this year, he's the key to it because they don't have anybody else on this roster that elevates that offense. Josh Jacobs, when healthy, is the foundation of an excellent running game. But in Green Bay, it's always been vertical. It's always been, you had Freeman, you had Sterling Sharp in the 90s. It's always predicated on having those ace guys in there. So that's where, again, it's going to be on him. Because who else would it be on this roster, Chris?
Yeah, and I got to tell you, I mean, in terms of who ends up being the better wide receiver, we won't know because of the quarterback situation in Cleveland, but could Isaiah Bond be the better wide receiver over Golden? I mean, I'm not a believer in Golden. I wasn't a believer in him coming out of Texas.
Okay.
And I continue to not be. And I haven't seen anything yet that tells me. Now, I could be proven wrong and he elevates this year and, you know, it's like, well, there's Chris. He doesn't know what he's talking about, right? But I didn't see it last year. I didn't see that consistency, that threat that you need, that like you've discussed historically Green Bay has. Which is why I've got them in last place, because I don't see that person that's stretching the field for them. Christian Watson can't stay healthy and on the field. I'm not convinced Golden is that guy. I don't see it. I don't think they have that guy right now. And well, I think that's going to leave Jordan Love pressing at times in the offense, trying to make things happen, and that's when bad things happen.
Yeah, if he's not that guy, then they're in trouble because they don't have that guy on the roster, and they probably, in my estimation,
I don't think he's the golden child.
If he's not, then I'm wrong about them in that they're not even a playoff team. I have them as a wild card team. I have them taking the final wild card spot away from Detroit. But that would not be the case if he's not up to it. Now, another young wide receiver who, again, I'm very big on, you talked about previously in our NFC East segment that Malik Nabers was your favorite wide receiver in the 2024 draft class. I, like most people, had Marvin Harrison Jr. at the lead here, but not far behind him. I have always been, And to the mirth of my fantasy league, where the guys just chuckle whenever I bring up his name. I've always been a big Roma Dunze guy.
And I knew that was coming.
Yeah, you knew that was coming. I am a Roma Dunze guy, and between him and Burden, and I kind of feel a little bit the same way about Burden. He was really kind of coming on down the stretch here too. So between wide receiver and tight end, and again, you're right that Moore is gone. But so they don't have any guys who are as proven. But as far as guys who are really on the ascent, I feel like they're right there in that sweet spot. And Moore, again, that was the thing where I probably didn't say enough about this when we were talking about Buffalo, but like the notion that like, oh, we got our slam dunk number one. Did you? Like, you upgraded over what Buffalo had last year, but we could see that Buffalo didn't have a good enough wide receiver room. But like, if DJ Moore is your slam dunk answer there, he wasn't a slam dunk answer in Chicago. He played well, but I mean, what about him? Ever in the course of his career has been like, that guy, if ever there was a number one wide receiver, it's that guy. So I don't think Chicago is going to miss him in that sense. But I think, again, the onus is going to be on these young guys kind of stepping up here. And I think Tiedemann has the chance on his side of the ball to do what I said about Dallas in an earlier segment with Caleb Downs and be that guy that can help bring the defense together. And I think, again, and I know that going back to the draft, you and Jason Jones, our senior editor, not as big on Caleb Williams as me and the conventional wisdom. And it is still a little bit uneven at this point, even as much as he improved last year. I do think, and I think, again, he's never going to be the complete on-platform kind of guy that people are wanting to see. I think that is never going to be the case. But I think the amount of the leap that he made from year one to year two, I don't think it's possible to make a similar leap year two to year three, because I think he'd be the league MVP. And I'm not forecasting that he has that kind of a season. But I do think, again, a mind like Ben Johnson working with him, a full off season under their belt to kind of review and reflect upon what worked and what didn't work last year. That's part of the reason that I'm picking the Bears to win the division, because I think there's going to be more growth in the passing game for this Chicago offense. And, of course, we know that that's the key to so much of the success in the league these days.
Yeah, I think there's a lot for Bears fans to be excited about with those young skill position players. They've got to take that step up in order for Chicago to continue to ascend. You're right. I mean, I started to feel at the end of last year that Jason and I got it wrong about Caleb Williams, and that may be more of a function of he got, for to his luck, he got a coach that knew how to best position him off platform so that he could do what he did. His rookie year felt to me exactly like what Jason and I warned about. Yep. Was a guy that won't do well, off platform. Or will not do well within the structure of the offense, rather, and that we had real doubts. Now, first year, different coach, they switch coaches. Look at that, talent, time, that formula with a coach who understands better how to use that player, and you get better results. He made a great leap forward, and I got to give him, all the credit on that, right? Because I was not a believer. But I don't know. I think to your point, I don't expect that same leap. You kind of hit on it in year three. I expect a little bit of an improvement, right, through experience. But I don't expect the monumental leap. And I still think that with the young guys, the young wideouts, the young tight ends, they have a chance to be excellent, right? But we haven't seen it yet. And I've seen that out of your boy Goff and those wide receivers in Detroit, which is why I'm giving Detroit the slightest edge, because I've seen it. And do the Chicago kids have the potential? Yep, they do. But I haven't seen it. I've seen it out of those guys in Detroit, which is the only reason I'm giving them that edge over the Bears. But that doesn't mean they won't improve. They won't make a jump. Again, Williams doesn't have to make that big mega jump. He can make a small step, and that will still put him in the MVP conversation.
Yes, I think it definitely would. And it won't surprise me if he is at least at the periphery of it by the end of the season. Now, when we talk about Detroit, it is a situation where the whole deal there, we talked about it in a previous segment with Philadelphia, with Sirianni also being a CEO type coach. I mean, Dan Campbell is the poster child for that. Now, he has, I think, at this point in time, a better grip on his own locker room than Sirianni does, which is extraordinary to say for a team a year away from a Super Bowl. But I think Campbell still has the locker room pretty much completely believing in him. But it is the thing where, again, the risk that you run into with CEO coaches is that it's going to be a turnstile at the coordinator positions. If they're doing really well, they're going to get hired away. If they're not doing really well, they're going to get S-canned and you bring in other guys here. So it's a thing where if I'm right and Detroit misses the playoffs, this is sort of the mirror image that I picked Philadelphia to make the playoffs, you didn't. And we agreed that if you're right about that, Sirianni's going to be in a world of pain. Here it's the other way around. You're picking Detroit to make the playoffs. I'm picking them to narrowly miss. If they miss, and what people are regarding in Detroit as, I mean, this is the best run they've had since the Alex Karras days, right? I mean, it's a low bar, but like name me a time in our lifetimes or even maybe slightly before when Detroit had a run like this. If they miss the playoffs 2 years in a row, I mean, that's the end of your boy, is it not?
No.
Really? Okay.
No. Think so. I think what I would say is this. It depends on the how and the why and what happens and why they miss the playoffs, right?
Okay.
If it's a function of, you know, game one and Goffnick gets his knee bent backwards.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, and again, I don't think they miss the playoffs if they stay healthy. Mm-hmm. If they stay healthy and they, you know, they miss the playoffs by a game or something like that. No, he's not getting fired, but his seat will be very warm next year, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
I don't see a world unless somehow everybody stays healthy and they finished, you know, 4-13, you know, which is not going to happen.
Right.
That where Campbell's done. I don't see it. I don't. His seat is ice cold right now. It would have to be extraordinary, in my opinion.
Okay.
Now, like in this league, it is obviously always, what have you done for me lately? And if they have a horrific season and no one can really put a finger on why, I don't think he's fired, but I think his seat is on fire next year. Right? And it'll be warm. It'll be warm.
I would agree.
And I think that's the case in any franchise, right? Yeah. I mean, if a team that's expected to have success grossly underachieves in the NFL, you're the coach, you're in the hot seat.
Yes.
It doesn't matter. If you're supposed to win the division and you finish third, your seat's on fire.
I agree with that. And I also agree with you on the caveat that, again, if we're talking like Jared Goff missing a good chunk of the year because of a freak injury or something like that, yeah, he's not going to be thrown under the bus because of that, because people realize in this league that, you can't really do it if you don't have your star quarterback in there. Look at the degree to which that worked, that level of understanding worked in Cincinnati, where if anybody would have said that Zach Taylor would have been the last man standing in that division, Chris, you would have had them institutionalized.
Mike Brown, A, is not going to pay two coaches, and B, although I do think Zach Taylor should have been fired. I mean, Joe Burrow's out. Like, you know, I would say this. The reason Zach Taylor should have been fired is that even with Joe Burrow out, their offense was competitive. It was always their defense, right? And I know Zach Taylor's an offensive coach, right? But at the same time, it's like, okay, if you're not the defensive guy, the guru as the head coach, you better damn well make sure that you have someone on the other side of the ball that is. And you know, you don't get to be like, well, keep my job, I'll find another guy. To this point, he's been able to do that, cycling DCs. And I think he's at a rope this year, talking about a guy on a hot seat.
Yeah.
I think Zach Taylor, and I mentioned this in our last segment, you know, when we talk about the AFC North, I think that he's I think that he is a guy that's, you know, Joe Burrow's gonna look to probably try to exit Cincinnati, and Zach Taylor, you know, he might be the first guy that takes the fall to try to keep that from happening. But I don't think Dan Campbell's in trouble, at all. And I don't think that the coach in Minnesota's in trouble, right? I mean, Minnesota has a good roster. Kevin O'Connor has proven that he's a good coach, offensive mind. I think that's a situation where the front office and ownership has to acknowledge that they've bungled the quarterback situation. Now, did the coach have a part in saying passing on Darnold? Maybe, right? Maybe he his input was, I can have McCarthy do whatever and it'll all be fine, and he was wrong. So maybe that is working against him in the building. But, you know, with, again, back to the – if you don't have a quarterback, you know, what do you have? I don't think the Vikings can, you know, they can't turn up the heat on his seat because, well, you got rid of a guy who won a Super Bowl. And so now you're bringing in a guy who's trying to salvage his career. I don't think Kyler Murray's there next year. Do you?
Here's the thing. I think he might be because if they have an absolutely horrible year, he won't be because they'll be in position to draft the quarterback. But Minnesota is rarely in position. I'd have to take a look at their draft position over the years. I don't remember any time in the 21st century that they were – I can almost guarantee they've never been in the top five. Don't think they've been in the top 10. And that's the whole thing about a franchise like that. And that's why you stay with a guy like Kyler Murray.
Like the Steelers.
Much like the Steelers, yes. Of just like, now with the Steelers, if they were smart about it, they would have just been like, look, we're going to a massive draft haul. You know, we're going to do the Ricky Williams deal or whatever. Ricky Williams light, maybe. But like, there's times where Pittsburgh should have been aggressive to go up and get a quarterback like that. Same with Minnesota, but they don't do it. And that's not in their DNA. So if they have the kind of year I think that they may have, a year where I think, and again, I'd have to look and see here as far as my predicted record for them. I've got them at, let's see how many wins here. I mean, I got them at 7-10, but it's the kind of thing where, you know, if that turns into like
probably the 10th to 12th pick, right? I mean,
yeah, like
somewhere in there.
There's a lot of teams that look like they're on a trajectory for 7 wins that end up at like 4 or 5. So if they stub their toe in a few places that I'm not seeing, because once the season starts, it's its own organism at that point. If they're a 4 or 5 win team, which to me is not impossible, then yes, I think they're in that conversation. But it's generally not in their DNA to move up and get a quarterback. So because Minnesota, a very good analogy there that you said, like with Pittsburgh, that's what they do. And it's like, well, who's the best veteran available? I guess we'll just settle for him. Kyler Murray fits with their pattern. And that's how they got him in the first place. Who's to say he wouldn't be there again next year? So I know, I think it's better than 50-50, believe it or not, Chris. So
yeah, that's I mean, you sense. Might be right, because if I'm right, and you know, and they go 9-8, you know, and
yeah. They're not drafting anybody,
you know, and they don't, and they've got the 14th or 15th pick.
Yeah,
you know, they may go, we're not going to get a quarterback. We've got to re-sign Murray for a 1-year deal or something.
Yeah,
and try to, you know, try to see what we can do with this. Maybe with that pick. In that middle first, pick another quarterback.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, probably not the worst idea. I mean, I think right now, looking at next year's draft, I think, and again, it's all over the place, but if I had to guess right now, Rick, I think there will be five quarterbacks in the first round.
Okay, yeah.
I think this is going to be a big, deep, and relatively talented class. At least it's looking like that. I think there's going to be about five quarterbacks in the first round. And if that's the case, you know, if you've got the 15th pick, let's call it, or the 14th pick or whatever, I don't, you know, wherever they end up shaking out, you know, they have the ability to move up a little bit without costing too much in order to get one of those. Let's say there's five graded first round quarterbacks.
Yeah.
They would have an opportunity, right?
Yep.
But to your point, they would then still behoove them to re-sign Murray on a one-year deal while they have their rookie get him ready and play Murray for most of the season, if not the whole season.
Yep.
And get that person ready. Again, depending on where they take him and, you know, which guy they favor and how they grade him and, you know, what they think of him. But to your point, you know, you're probably right that Murray is more likely to be with them in 27 on a one-year deal than to not.
Yep. And I'm not advocating it. I don't think it's the smart thing to do. I think they can do better. But, like, it's the circle of life. If he ends up being there as, like, insurance for the next guy, all he's got to do is look across the locker room at Carson Wentz. Like, you know, Carson Wentz has already moved into that role. He can say, welcome to the sweet embrace of death, Kyler Murray. This is, you know, just lie back and enjoy it at this point here. This is who you are.
How about
now.
The sweet embrace of backup quarterback money? I mean,
well, there is that. Yeah.
You know, you're gonna have a paycheck for the next decade. Carson Wentz is still in the league. Are we kidding? Yes, sure. He is. And he's still getting paid millions. Chase Daniel got paid what? $100 million to take like 20 snaps in football games?
Case Keenum, but these guys don't see themselves as Case Keenum is the thing. But eventually you come forced to see yourself as Case Keenum. Yeah.
And I know they see themselves as, you know, all pros when they're not, but right.
But these are guys not synonymous with starter, notwithstanding Case Keenum's career year in 2021. You know, was that 2017, right? Yeah, that was the year that they had the near miss with Philadelphia, with that going to the Super Bowl. Yeah, so that's they see themselves as being more than that. But all right, any other thoughts on the NFC North, Chris?
Looking forward to the Hammond, Indiana Bears. And, you know, seeing how that shakes out. We didn't talk about that at all.
No.
In terms of off the field stuff in the division. That's probably that's obviously the biggest story.
Yeah.
Unfolding is, do the Bears really go through with it? And for those that are watching, if you've never been to Chicago, I get it. It's crossing state lines. It's not that big a deal. Although I will say the Hammond area is very much like an armpit. it's not a pretty area.
Okay.
It's very industrial, swampy. It's not nice.
So fittingly, like the Meadowlands then, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that was going to say you know, Chicago people, the national media is all worked up. The Chicago people are worked up. And I'm like, Jets, Giants?
Yeah.
You know, the Patriots are out in the middle of nowhere at Foxborough. Now, I know they're the New England Patriots, so they can kind of get away with that. But they are in the middle of nowhere. You've got the 49ers, you know, right. Moved way out of the city, down by an airport next to a substation that's literally killing them.
Yes.
They're no way near anything.
Right.
There's talk of the Chiefs moving out of state to Kansas City.
It's locked down.
To Kansas City.
It is locked down. They're going to Kansas City, Kansas. By the way, I always knew there were two Kansas Cities.
They're in the state.
I never knew that Kansas City, Kansas was the suburb. I just knew there was two of them, but it's the suburb. So you're moving to a suburb across state lines. Now you're still in Kansas City, quote unquote, unlike in these other situations, but still. I agree with you.
I mean, they're moving across the state line.
Yeah.
I mean, I know they're Green Bay, but I'm like, you know, Green Bay is Green Bay, but they're in the middle of nowhere. They're in Green Bay.
Right.
You know, it's really not. And if you've been to Greater Chicago, I mean, it's no further away from their existing stadium of where they were proposing to build the new stadium.
Right. Arlington, you know, in the other direction. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's Arlington Heights. Yeah, it crosses the state line. Yeah, it's not exactly a pretty area.
Right.
But in terms of Chicagoland, you just went further on the south side than the White Sox, right? I mean, it's not that big a deal in terms of, you know, a team that's, you know, moved a distance or is outside of a city center. We have a lot of them in the league. I mean, the Miami Dolphins, I mean, your Dolphins play a zillion miles away from downtown Miami. They're not in the city of Miami.
Right. They call it Miami Gardens, but still, yeah. So
I mean, yeah, but they're out in the swampland.
Right.
You know, it happens all over the place. And so it is what it is. I mean, I think Chicago, the media especially, got to be like, listen, the Bears are, you know, they're another one of these ownership groups that don't inherently have a lot of independent wealth.
Right.
And so they're going to do what they have to do to, to build the thing that they want. And if Indiana wants to be a two NFL team state, you know, they're gonna have to, Indiana wants to have them there. So they're backing up the Brinks truck. I mean, that's an Indiana choice, but, you know, and obviously a lot of Northern Indiana people are Bears fans already.
Right.
So, not shocking that they would want to pull that team in and expand sort of the development that might be able to occur around that stadium to some degree, but.
Yeah. Well, and the funny thing is I've seen memes about this. Could it be three teams at some point? I've seen jokes about Southern Indiana building the Bengals stadium. Like if Indiana becomes the superpower of NFL football with three NFL teams after the Indiana Hoosiers have become a superpower in NCAA football, what is this
joke about to? It? But I'm like the Lawrenceburg Bengals.
Yeah.
You know, Lawrenceburg could be famous for something other than MGP and the old Ross and Squibb distillery. let's do it, man. Let's have the Lawrenceburg Bengals.
I appreciate any reference that can go as swiftly over my head as those ones did. Well played.
Yeah. For those that don't know, Lawrenceburg, Indiana was once the home of Seagram's largest distillery. And obviously Seagram's at one time was the largest spirits distiller in the world. That facility still exists and still produces a massive amount of distilled spirits, including whiskey.
Okay.
It is sort of a for whiskey and bourbon lovers, it is a bit of a mecca, if you will, in terms of an iconic distillery. And it's, again, it's just over the border from Cincinnati, and it's just over the river from Kentucky. So it's right in the heart of bourbon country. And it's in essence a Cincinnati suburb. And it would be funny if Indiana went and made that play to get the Bengals to move over. I always honestly thought, Rick, that if that were to happen, it would actually be Kentucky making the play.
Sure.
To get the Bengals to come across the river and call them still the Cincinnati Bengals, but put them on the other side of the river and give them a sweetheart deal. But to your point, maybe it's Indiana. Maybe Indiana says, let's do it.
That would be the funniest thing ever. And as far as the knowledge you just dropped there, that's a true the more you know, kids. And that feels like a good mic drop right there for our NFC North discussion. So coming up next, a division infinitely less interesting, but hopefully the discussion, in fact, I guarantee the discussion will be a lot more interesting than the division for the NFC South. That's a low bar for us.
I'll say this. I think the interlude of talking about the old Seagram's distillery is a perfect point to bring up when we're about to start talking about the NFC South, because fans of those teams need to be prepared to drink this season.
Yes, yes. They, as they have the last several seasons.
That's correct.
Past this prologue in the NFC South, as we will get to in our next segment. But here today, we've been discussing the NFC North. Thank you very much, as always, Chris Galloway. And thank you, everybody, for checking out our segment on the 2026 NFC North in the FDH Lounge.